This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The bad news just keeps coming. 8,000 jobs slashed at Sony, 1,500 expected at Yahoo, and News Today, Home Depot will close over 100 stores and cut some 2,000 jobs. Even the National Football League says it'll lay off about 150 people. The cuts come just days after government figures showed that U.S. employers axed more than 500 million people off payrolls in November, the most in 34 years. The job losses go right across the board. Manufacturing, high tech, finance, the service industry, and let's not forget journalism. The story hits close to home today. National Public Radio announced layoffs this afternoon. From time to time, we'll hear stories of how people adapt in tough times. It's Your Life on Recession. We begin today with layoffs. Later in the hour, we're to blow off steam when the cafes and coffee shops vanish, just as we need them most. But first, if you've been laid off, tell us your story. We also want to hear from those of you who've had to make the decision to let employees go and tell them. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website, npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And we begin with Kevin Wilk. He joins us on the phone from his home in Walnut Creek, California, and he was laid off from his sales job this past Monday. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you very much.
And I understand this was not the first layoff for you this year.
Well, as it turns out, actually, no, it wasn't. Yahoo had an original announced layoffs of about 10% of their workforce back in February, and that was actually the first round of layoffs. Obviously, there's going to be a lot more today. And then I hooked on with a company after doing consulting for several different companies over the course of the next couple months after February. And in this particular company, offer the best opportunity in the near term as well as in the long term. And then they just had to shut down operations on Monday, as it turned out.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got to be pretty strange.
It definitely is a different feeling, although unfortunately one that I'm used to this year. The biggest changes, I think, are just in your day-to-day rhythm and waking up and knowing what you're going to be doing, whether it's commuting into work or different meetings that you have, or in my case, traveling at different times, and just feeling like there's that disconnect now. What am I going to do after I have breakfast in the morning and read the paper? Happily, there were opportunities to get involved with consulting, but just day-to-day meetings with friends or former colleagues take on a different tone. There's a work DNA, I think, that everybody shares in the workforce, and that goes through how things are at work, how are things with employees, how are things with your bosses, and it's just part of the conversation, and that part of the conversation you just don't have anymore.
It's almost like your legs are asleep somehow. You can't keep up in the step.
Yeah, there is definitely a slowness about it, and while there's the anticipation of what's around the corner and coming up next, there's also the anxiety that comes with when will that be.
How did you hear the news this last time?
I got a heads up. I was a VP of sales for this company, and I got a heads up at the end of last week that there were going to be most everybody laid off this next week, and just a couple people kept around to kind of keep the doors open while everything gets cleaned out. It was obvious that sales weren't going to be able to continue, though, and so the CEO had called me and given me that news. So I walked in Monday morning in a very depressed environment.
And then there was the meeting, the big meeting. You're probably wondering why I've asked you all here.
You know, funny enough, that wasn't the case. I think everybody had probably gotten that phone call. It was a smaller company, certainly not on Yahoo's size. And we had all had individual conversations, and then we each kind of continued those conversations in person on Monday. So there wasn't really the big company-wide meeting.
Well, I guess it was a pretty calm day on Monday. Maybe I'm misreading that.
Well, it was, yeah, people came in there, they kind of cleaned up, said their goodbyes, and pretty much everybody was out by noon. Now, compare that to, say, back in February when Yahoo had announced the first round of layoffs, and so that was about 1,400 people, and that was just a constant revolving door into the primary offices throughout Yahoo in the U.S., well, at least the U.S. I know that it happened internationally as well, and that was pretty significant. I think everybody knew people that had been laid off at different levels, mm-hmm. and you'd see people go into rooms with their boss or perhaps somebody from HR, and you'd get your packet of information, you'd be told what's going on, and then you walk out 20 minutes later and the next person walks in.
Ouch.
Yeah.
And everybody sort of watches the walk of death, you know.
There was that kind of feeling. I actually did want to stick around. I had a lot of client meetings that I had to cancel or set up for other people, and so I was going to be around the office for the day doing that. But what's kind of funny is, or funny, I guess, in a strange way, is that after about a half an hour of getting all the sad looks, and I'm so sorry, I know you're going to be fine, things are going to go well, everything happens for a reason, after about an hour, you go, well, I'm sick of that.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave.
Well, we wish you the best of luck this time around, too.
Well, thank you very much.
Kevin Wilk laid off from his sales position this past Monday with us on the phone from his home in Walnut Creek, California. Joining us now is Stephen Greenhouse. He is the labor and workplace correspondent for the New York Times, author of the book, The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. He's with us at our bureau in New York. And Stephen, nice to talk with you again.
Nice to be here, Neil.
And I don't think Kevin's story is at all unusual.
No, it's unfortunate. It's unusual that he has been laid off twice this year, but according to statistics, more than 1 million Americans have been laid off this year. The nation's lost 1.9 million jobs. Unemployment is 6.7%. It's up from under 4% early this decade. It's not a very happy time. As I tell people, it's very cold out there in the job market.
Mm-hmm. I moved a decimal point earlier in the broadcast. I said half a billion jobs lost last month. That would have been pretty interesting. Half a million jobs lost last month. So I apologize for the error. And the other thing we're hearing about those statistics, Steve, is that, well, they're only telling part of the picture. They don't count the people who are stopped looking for work, and they don't count the people who are underemployed.
Exactly, Neil. According to last month's labor report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, more than 600,000 people just basically dropped out of the workforce. They grew so discouraged, they stopped looking for work, and therefore they're not counted as unemployed. Another more than 600,000 are working part-time when they want to work full-time. And so we have all these people who are not just unemployed, but underemployed. And according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 12.5% of the American workforce is underemployed, and that's the highest level since the BLS started keeping that statistic in the early 1990s. So it's really bad out there. And not only that, wages have been fairly stagnant. You know, the number of uninsured is getting worse. I'm worried for our nation right now.
You're worried for our nation?
Yes, I am. I don't want to sound too grave, Neil, but things seem to be spiraling downward. I think President-elect Obama and his economic advisors are eager to help jumpstart the nation's economy, and they realize that an important and large stimulus package is needed. I think what we're seeing is day after day, there's a trickle of companies laying off workers, and that's good for the individual company because it helps reduce their costs and might increase their profits. But when everyone's doing that, it just snowballs. And then, as we just heard, Yahoo laid off people early this year. It laid them off again now, and companies will keep on laying off so long as many other companies are laying off. So that's why President Obama, in his wisdom, is trying to push for a very meaningful stimulus program to create jobs and reverse this negative momentum.
Create jobs rather than create spending, which the last stimulus was about.
Yes. President Bush's stimulus basically gave people tax rebates, and they spent them. But that, economists say, would not create nearly enough jobs as what President-elect Obama plans to do. He wants to create infrastructure jobs. He wants to create green jobs in manufacturing, and that will directly create jobs.
Well, let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. We're talking with Stephen Greenhouse of the New York Times, the labor and workplace correspondent there. 800-989-8255. If you've been laid off, tell us your story. If you've had to lay people off and make that decision and tell them, give us a call too. Let's go with Marie. Marie with us from Danbury, Connecticut.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Yes, I was told yesterday to expect that I might not be at my own job much longer. And I arrived home to discover that both my father and my father-in-law were laid off yesterday. So hard times are hitting home.
Yes, indeed. Who told you, and how did you hear the message?
My immediate supervisor told me about my own job, and I found out from my mother, actually, last night at a rehearsal about my father. And I got home, and my husband told me about his father.
Wow. It's going to be a pretty bleak Christmas.
Indeed, indeed. Not so many presents for the little one this year.
I'm sorry about the news, Marie.
I am too. Well, thank you so much for the sympathy, and let's hope that things get better starting in January.
Let's hope so.
Take care.
Here's an email from Daniel in Louisville. I think it's terrible what's happening to our jobs. Could you ask your guest why the layoffs come so close to Christmas? I have a few theories, but I don't want to believe it's because they can't afford to give people their bonuses.
That's a good question. I think one big reason is the retailers are seeing that that spending is down, is not very strong. We saw, you know, this huge earthquake in the stock market in September and October, and that's really shaken many companies, and people are spending less. They're worried. There's this credit crunch. People are buying fewer cars. People are buying fewer houses. And companies that produce cars, companies that produce Home Depot, that produce goods for houses, you know, construction companies are all laying off people because the demand just isn't there for their products. It's unfortunate that it's coming right before Christmas, but in ways it's a ripple effect of the eruption, the earthquake in the stock market back in September.
Here's an email from Carrie in Portland, Oregon. I was laid off on Monday from my job with a geotechnical consulting firm in Portland, Oregon. I have a master's degree and almost 5 years' experience. 1.5 years ago, we were so busy, people were working 60 to 80 hours a week. My generation was always taught if you work hard and get a good education, your future is practically guaranteed. I have been looking everywhere for work, and it's just not out there. That's what you've been reporting, Steve. And this causes people to lose faith.
I wish I could use a magic wand and tell this guest, yes, with your advanced degree, let's hope you could find a job tomorrow. But, you know, high-tech companies are laying off workers. Financial companies are laying off workers. Manufacturing companies are laying off workers. You know, the nation's lost 1.9 million jobs. There isn't enough work to go around. And, you know, hopefully with a stimulus program that will create some excitement, some hope that will cause businesses to, you know, not only to stop laying off people, but to start hiring people. But right now, we are at a difficult time, you know, as evidenced, Neil, by this recent development in Chicago, where this at this Republican Windows and Doors company, where they announced they were shutting this Windows factory, and the workers actually occupied the factory because they were so upset.
We'll talk more about that in just a minute when we come back from a break, because there's information in there that I think some people are interested in, though the situation appears to have been resolved. But more with Stephen Greenhouse of the New York Times in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. We're talking about layoffs. It's the talk of the nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about layoffs, and the numbers are not pretty. 14,000 at Rio Tinto, the giant mining company. Thousands each at Dow Chemical, Sony, Wyndham Hotels, cuts at Electronic Arts, Anheuser-Busch, many others. If you've been laid off in this tough economy, tell us your story. We also want to hear from those of you who've had to decide to let employees go. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Steve Greenhouse is our guest labor and workplace correspondent for the New York Times, author of the book The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. And Steve, I wanted to follow up on that Republic Windows story in Chicago, where the, as you mentioned, the employees occupied the building after they were abruptly let go. One of the things they were demanding was accrued vacation time and severance pay that they've been promised. Isn't there a law that covers that?
There isn't a law about vacation and severance pay, but they feel that they were, you know, that the company had contractually committed to pay that. What amazes me about Republic is that this apparently is the first time in decades that laid-off workers in the United States actually sat in and occupied a plant. You know, I wrote this book, The Big Squeeze, where I talk about how things have been tough for the nation's workers for several years. You know, wages have been stagnant this decade. Health benefits are getting worse. Pension benefits are getting worse. Workers are often being pushed to work harder. And when I give talks around the country about my book, people often ask, if things are so bad for the nation's workers, why aren't people protesting more? Why aren't they taking to the streets? And I say I'm not sure. Maybe people are spending so much time on their Xbox or IMing friends. But what's happened with Republican Windows and Doors is people at one factory, you know, where the layoffs last week said, we're fed up, we're not going to take it anymore, and they sat in. And I think they were not only angry, but they were feeling hopelessness because they don't know where they're going to go next. They don't know how they're going to feed their families. They need their vacation pay. They need their severance pay. And they're also upset that the company that owns the factory did not give them the 60-day notice that federal law generally requires before a sizable company lays off many workers.
And they had lost their line of credit with the Bank of America, and I think the bank has now been embarrassed into extending it.
Yes, it's the company, Republic Windows, says that Bank of America cut off its credit line and therefore the company had to close the plant. It's a little mysterious, Neil, because the company happens to be opening up another plant in Iowa, and some people say that maybe the company is trying to make Bank of America the fall guy, the bad guy. You know, Bank of America has really gotten a black eye about this, and they're waking up and saying, we want this embarrassment to go away, and they're going to make money available, which would be nice for these people's Christmas. They'll make money available so they get their accrued vacation pay so that they will get their severance pay. So maybe Christmas won't be so sad for these workers.
Let's get another call on the line. This is Jim. Jim with us in Portland, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi, Jim.
I have a question about I was laid off about 3 weeks ago, and since then I've had a few friends who've been laid off as well, and I wonder if there are any statistics within these numbers of layoffs regarding age. I'm 52, and I've got a 25-year career in marketing. Other folks I know who have been laid off really represent a broad spectrum of the business, from construction to finance to retail. And, you know, at our age, we're paying for college. We're thinking about retiring in 15 years. We're watching our 401s tank. So is there any kind of trending that is that can be identified in terms of age of folks who are being laid off?
A lot of people that age also taking care of elderly parents, Steve Greenhouse.
Yes.
Correct.
I haven't studied the most recent statistics, Jim, but my sense is that two age groups are hit hardest by layoffs. The most senior employees are often the most expensive, and the youngest employees who are the least experienced. And what's crazy now is that, you know, a lot of, you know, workers in their 50s and 60s are thinking, gee, I'm almost at the age I could think about retiring. And then when they've seen what's happened to the stock market since September and how many people's 401ks are literally 50% of what they were, a lot of people who were thinking, oh, gee, I could retire in 2 years or 4 years, now they're worried that they might have to work until they're, you know, age 70, 75, 78. And now they might lose their jobs.
I think that's what a lot of us are dealing with. Folks like me who have thought, wow, I've got another 10 or 15 years, and then, you know, things are going pretty nicely, and all of a sudden you kind of see the rug being pulled out.
Yeah.
Yeah. In my book, Jim, I wrote about a gentleman in Minnesota who at age 67 had open-heart surgery. He thought he was going to retire, and at age 73 he saw, gee, I don't have enough money left in my 401k to retire. So at age 73, he's working two separate part-time jobs as a security guard. And I've interviewed many, you know, workers in their early 60s who are feeling panicky, I'm sorry to say. They see what's happened to their 401k, and they say, I'm going to have to work till I'm 75.
Jim,
I hope not.
I hope not, too.
Let's hope not, yes.
Yeah. Jim, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Angela. Angela with us from San Antonio.
Hi.
Hi, Angela.
Well, I was actually laid off in September.
And how's the search for work been going?
It's very bleak. Like, I have only gotten rejections through the email, or I've gotten no response, which is really odd for me because usually I have some kind of lead on things, but then it's just been pretty desperate lately because it's been two and a half months and my unemployment will run out. And then not on top of that, I'm on medication that I can't go off of. And then my Medicaid just sent me a letter saying they're going to cut me off because I don't have a job. And trust me, I've been looking everywhere. I've even applied at like the bare minimum wage places just to chart it.
And what kind of
demonstrate?
What kind of career have you had?
I was a computer programmer, and I was a contractor, so I was sort of used to the jobs lasting only a certain amount of time.
And but it doesn't sound like you've got much of a cushion left.
A what?
A cushion? Do you have any money saved up?
I did, and I'm pretty much going through it all right now.
And what are you going to do when that runs out?
I really don't know. I don't really want to think about it because I'm just hoping that something is going to come up. But it doesn't, I don't know, I'm like almost like about the point of panicking, though, because it's like December and I only have like 2 weeks before December's over and then I have to start looking for things for my medicine.
Yeah. That's a very sad story, Angela. I can't do anything but wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you so much, and I really think that I'm really hoping something will work out. My family is trying to help me also. So
sure.
And
one thing is, at least yeah, it's cold comfort, but there are other people out there in the same situation.
I know, and that's like what almost makes me feel better in a bad way, but it just makes me feel like I'm not the only one out there, but I hope something gets better for everybody.
Yeah, rising tide that'll lift all boats.
Yeah.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Steve, this has been mentioned in many contexts, but the health coverage crisis in this country exacerbates this problem.
Yes, I feel terrible for Angela. I feel terrible for Marie and her family. It sounds weird that with Marie losing her job that they're going to cut her off on Medicaid. I thought, if anything, they would extend her. It's unfortunate that in the nation we have at least 46 million people who don't have health insurance, and that I'm sure is increasing as more and more people get laid off. And it's bad not to have a job. It's bad not to have one's wages go up. And if you don't have health insurance and your kid gets sick or you get sick or you need medicine, it's really tough. And I think President-elect Obama is going to try to address this issue of the uninsured. I often think it's crazy that just because someone loses a job, you know, his or her spouse, his or her kids will find themselves without health insurance. And this is a problem that, you know, worries, you know, tens of millions of Americans. And it's something that I feel the nation really needs to address.
Here's an email from Katie. I think part of the problem is that we've become so specialized and have a much higher standard of living that when we lose our jobs, it's even more devastating. I see jobs out there, but the question is, can people afford to take them? I think the fundamental issue is that there is work, but people cannot afford to take any job. We've lost our flexibility. No longer can we just work to get by. We have too much risk. What do you think of that?
It's an interesting point, but I think that just, with all due respect to Katie, I don't think there are enough jobs out there, because there are a lot of low-wage workers who are thrown out of work, and they're eager to take these low-wage jobs so that they could feed their families. And yes, there are a lot of, you know, higher-wage, higher-tech workers who have lost their jobs too, who might be reluctant to take these low-wage jobs, but there aren't even enough low-wage jobs for low-wage workers. So that's why I say we need some serious, you know, pump priming, some serious efforts to jumpstart the economy, to help lift all boats, to help people, the low-wage people at the bottom, to help the high-tech people higher up the food chain.
Let's see if we can go to Leonard. Leonard with us from New London in Connecticut.
Hi. I have a degree in biochemistry and molecular biology on a full scholarship. I did a two-year Fulbright fellowship in Malaysia. I came back just days before the election, and my question is, did I make the right move in coming back?
You might have been more opportunities in Malaysia, you think?
I don't know. But, are Asian markets doing any better than America? And was I wrong to come back to Southeastern Connecticut?
Steve Greenhouse?
Do you have a lover in Malaysia or in Connecticut? Anyway, that's a tough question. I think the markets in the U.S. are doing worse than the markets in Asia, and I think there remains more economic dynamism in Asia than there is in the United States. But, you know, as a foreigner in Malaysia, it might not be so easy to find a job there. But the advice I give people now is, if you have a job, hold on to it. A job in the hand right now is worth four or five in the bush. So if you had a good job, or you said you were a graduate student in Malaysia, but, you know, if you have a good job somewhere, try to stay with it. And then I also, sometimes when I speak to college audiences, I say, now is a great time to go to graduate school, the law school, the medical school, because there aren't many jobs out there. So really try to concentrate on improving your education so that in 2 years or 3 years, when the economy really rebounds, you'll be well positioned to take advantage.
Leonard, is that an option for you?
No, I'm getting married. I don't have the money to do both, unfortunately. But thank you very much for your comment, and I'll continue the conversation off the air.
Okay, thanks, Leonard. Here's an email from Daniel. I own a commercial print company just over a year old. We experienced aggressive growth this year. I'd expected to add equipment and staff in the first quarter of next year. Well, not only is that expansion now impossible, but I'm having to consider layoffs. I care deeply about my staff. I've stopped taking my own salary to keep some people on over the holidays. We have a solid spreadsheet, but there is just no working capital credit market in this country anymore. That credit crunch, we're hearing, that is not unfrozen. It is really difficult for people to get credit.
Yes, I'm glad Daniel asked that very tough, very sad question. You know, an earlier caller asked, why are there so many layoffs right now before Christmas? It's because, you know, for exactly the reason Daniel raises. A lot of banks are not lending money for businesses to expand, for businesses to pay their payroll, for consumers to buy cars, for consumers to buy houses. And it's really causing, you know, companies that have been running pretty solidly to all of a sudden stall. And I think that, unfortunately, has been happening with Daniel's company. And let's hope in January, with a new president, with a stimulus program, there will be a restoration of hope. There will be some new energy and excitement in the economy. But as President-elect Obama has said, things will probably still get worse for a while before they get better.
We're talking with Stephen Greenhouse of the New York Times. His book, The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Franklin Roosevelt was elected in 1932 at the depths of the Depression, and that brought a lot of people a hope, and there was a lot of pump priming then, too, and the Great Depression lasted until 1939, 1940.
Yes. The Obama administration, the incoming Obama administration, realizes, you know, has learned from the lessons of FDR. They realize that it's important to have a big stimulus program. There's a debate now in Congress whether to do $500 million, $700 million, even a trillion, $500 billion, $600 billion, even $1 trillion. And my sense is it's like, you know, the car is stalled and you need a battery to start it, and you don't want to take a chance of using a battery that's perhaps not strong enough or large enough. You want to make sure that your battery, you want to make sure your stimulus program is enough to really jolt, to really jumpstart the economy. And what happened with Roosevelt is they had a nice stimulus program, deficit spending program for a few years. Then around 1937, he decided to stop stimulating the economy, and the nation really slid back into depression. And, you know, Larry Summers, Barack Obama, you know, Tim Geithner, you know, they've learned from what happened with Roosevelt, and that's why they're really trying to get out in front of this mess. You know, Friday we had that bad unemployment report. The very next day, President-elect Obama got on the radio and said, you know, and trying to, you know, bring confidence to the, and hope to the nation, just as FDR did, he said, I'm going to launch the biggest stimulus program in decades.
Let's get Katie on the line. Katie with us from Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes, hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Well, I've been listening, and I recently, my husband was laid off 2 weeks ago, but more than that, I was laid off over a year ago in October 2000. I was working for a land development firm in marketing, and I went 2 months looking, and finally decided that receiving some kind of paycheck was better than receiving no kind of paycheck, so I worked retail until finally someone talked with me and said, you know, why don't you become a teacher? So I applied to Nassau County, and now I am a fourth-grade teacher, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me. So I've been teaching, and, you know, like I said recently, my husband was laid off, and he worked in transportation of vehicles and everything like that as a dispatcher, and now he's actually going to become a truck driver because people with a good driving record and CDL, you know, they're still hiring. So we've completely shifted our careers in order to kind of adapt to the changing economy, and you know, that was just my comment. And the email that came in with the lady who talked about how people just aren't willing to accept the low income jobs, I was willing to accept anything that anyone would give me, but because they said I had too much experience, they didn't want me.
Overqualified, yeah.
Overqualified.
Well, congratulations for finding the silver lining, Katie.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And
bye-bye.
I wanted to end on that point, Steve Greenhouse. You spoke earlier that you were worried for our country. You also spoke to the young man who was, you know, about the idea of going back to school and getting a degree for when the economy rebounds in a couple of 3 years. You do have some optimism?
I do have some optimism, but as you know, Neil, the recession has lasted about a year already. Some economists will say it will last, you know, another year or two. A three-year recession would be pretty nasty. Some people are saying the unemployment rate might go over 10%. That's fairly brutal. It's not like the 25% during the Great Depression. But, you know, what worries me is we're seeing this constant cycle of layoffs, especially in manufacturing. The nation has lost nearly 1 in 4 manufacturing jobs this decade. And President-elect Obama and the nation, the nation's businesses, the nation's workers really have their work cut out for them. And I'm hoping that there is some way to restore confidence, to restore hope, so that businesses stop laying off people, so that consumers will be able to spend again, will be able to feel confident again. It's been sad, Neil, to listen to all these callers who've been laid off. I mean, it shows how this is a difficult time. And you know, economists are worried that the December and January, February unemployment report might be worse than the one we just saw. That's why I say I'm worried. But I also am confident that 2 years, 3 years, 4 years out, the nation's economy will be recovering. So we have to hold on.
Well, we'll continue talking with you, Steve. Appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Neil.
Stephen Greenhouse, the labor and workplace correspondent for The New York Times, with us from our bureau in New York. And coming up next, in these tough times, just when we need them, places to hang out are vanishing. Cafes, diners, bars. What's your third place? How's it doing? Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News.